السلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ. السلام فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له واشهد ان لا اله الا الله وحده لا شريك له واشهد ان محمدا عبده ورسوله. اما بعد فان احسن الكلام كلام الله وخير الهدى هدى محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وان شر الامور محدثاتها وكل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار. So my lecture today, inshallah ta'ala, is to take some benefits from a book written by the noble Sheikh Abdurrahman bin Nasir al-Sa'di rahimahullah ta'ala. And the book is called Fawaid Mustanbaqa min Qissat Yusuf alayhi salam. Benefits derived from the story of Yusuf alayhi salam. And as I mentioned in the lecture the other day, that when we look at the stories of the prophets in the Quran, we see that these stories were mentioned in the Quran being revelation from Allah to His final messenger Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam. And the stories of the previous prophets, one of their purposes was to console and strengthen the messenger Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam in terms of whatever he faced from his people, of the trials and tribulations and difficulties. And for that reason, we see that Allah azza wa jalla, He mentions, وَكُلًّا نَقُصُّ عَلَيْكَ مِنْ أَنْبَاءِ الرُّسُلِ مَا نُثَبِّتُ بِهِ فُؤَادَكَ. That all of them we narrate to you the stories of the prophets in order that we may strengthen and make firm your heart. So when you look at these stories, in these stories there are signs, there are ayat, there are benefits, there are lessons. So whether it's the story of Nuh alayhi salam and the story with his people, how his people were a disbelieving, transgressing, oppressive people, and how he had patience with respect to them, or whether it is the story of Musa alayhi salam, who is facing a tyrant, an evil, tyrannical ruler. And so each story that we see, there is something in that story which gives strength to the messenger of Allah SWT, and also to those who read the book for us. In the stories of the prophets, there is an ibrah, there is a lesson, a consideration, an admonition. And so in the story of Yusuf alayhi salam, it is a beautiful story. And we see that Allah Azza wa Jal, He says specifically about this story, لَقَدْ كَانَ فِي يُوسُفَ وَإِخْوَتِهِ آيَاتٌ لِلسَّائِلِينَ. That there was, or that there is in Yusuf and his brothers, signs, ayat, for those who ask. And the Shaykh says that there are signs, considerations, lessons of various types for everyone who asks and who desires guidance and right guidance. And this is because when you reflect upon this story from its beginning to its end, you see that the people in the story, like Ya'qub, who is Israel, the father of Yusuf, or whether Yusuf himself, or whether the brethren of Yusuf, we see that for each of these parties, we see that they move from one situation to another situation, from a trial to a favor, from the situation of being put to trial to a situation of being bestowed a favor, and from lowliness to enslavement to one of nobility and honor and leadership, from being separated and split to being united. from having grief and sadness to having joy, happiness and rejoicing, from having affluence and plenty to, you know, when you have plenty in terms of food and provision, to a situation of famine and drought, and then the other way around, from a situation of famine and drought to one of abundance and plentiness, from a situation of narrowness to a situation of vastness. All of these meanings, all of these changes, we find that they take place in the story of Yusuf alayhi salam, and hence for the one who really truly reflects upon this story, he will, there are many, many ayat, there are many signs for that person. So in this story, are we all familiar with the story? Because it is a lengthy story. Is everybody familiar, or shall we give a quick summary of the story? Who can give us, okay, let's ask the audience. Who can give us the start of the story of Yusuf?
He was the son of Yaqub. He was a Nabi, and he had 11 brothers. And of his 11 brothers, they grew jealous of him because Yaqub had a favor upon Yusuf alayhi salam. And Yusuf alayhi salam had a dream about something that was a sign of him being having the ability to be a prophet and a Nabi.
Yeah.
And eventually, when he conveyed this to his father told him to not convey this to anyone else because there were jealousy in the hands of his brothers, and they were plot to destroy him. And he was excited, and he went ahead and he conveyed the message to his brothers, and they did just like that. They at first they wanted to kill him, but they lessened because his father was a Nabi, they knew better, and they didn't want to commit something so criminal and so dire. So they lessened the punishment, so just casting him away. And he was sold in the Egyptian marketplace. And
okay, you've done very well up to there. MashaAllah, you got all the details pretty much correct. So just, because obviously these lessons are taken from the story, so it's worthwhile just to quickly give a summary of the whole story. And so, Yusuf alayhi salam is the son of Ya'qub, a noble prophet, and he has 11 brothers. And he is the favorite of his father, and he's given a special treatment. And this brings some jealousy from his other brethren. And so he has a dream, and in this dream he sees the sun and the moon and the 12 stars all prostrating to him. And his father tells him not to tell this story to his brethren for fear that they might do something. So in any case, the brothers, they plot and they plan, and they ask Ya'qub alayhi salam that they allowed to take Yusuf out, and that they would look after him and so on and so forth. And what they did was, they first, one of them suggested that they kill him, and another one suggested, well, rather we should actually put him in a ditch and then, leave him. And so some traders came in a caravan, and they found Yusuf alayhi salam, and then his other brothers who were also present, they sold him. They thought this was the best way to lose Yusuf. So the traders took Yusuf alayhi salam and they took him to Egypt, and they sold him to the Aziz, the ruler. And so in the household of the ruler, he grew up, and he also was taught the knowledge of the interpretation of dreams. And so the wife of the ruler, she tried to seduce Yusuf alayhi salam, not once, but on two occasions. And when he refused to succumb, she threw him in prison. When he was in prison, two other prisoners came, and they both had a vision, a dream, that they wanted interpreting. So they each told him the dream, and he correctly interpreted the dream. And one of them was to be released, and the other one was to die in a certain way. The one who was released, the one who was saved, he said to So Yusuf al-Islam said to him that when you go back to the king, make mention of me. But this man was made to forget. And so Yusuf al-Islam remained in the prison for a very long time, for many, many years. Then it so happened that the leader himself, the Aziz himself, he began to have dreams. And in these dreams he saw that seven ears of corn were dry ears of corn, were eating seven green ears of corn. And seven skinny, lean cows were consuming seven fat cows. And he couldn't understand what this dream meant. And all of his people whom he asked, they couldn't understand what this was. So this same man who's in the prison, he then remembered that there was someone in the prison who was truthful and honest and who interpreted the dream. So he asked permission from the king to go back to the prison and to speak to this person and to get the interpretation. So he got the interpretation. Yusuf alayhi salam told him that there will be 7 years of plentifulness, 7 years of hardship and difficulty and drought and famine, and that they should prepare. So this man went back and he told the Aziz, the ruler, and this eventually led to Yusuf al-Islam being taken out of prison and being put in charge of the countries, you know, the collecting the grains and preparing and so on and so forth. So then it so happened that in preparation for this famine, which was, you know, which was later to come in Philistine, Sham, in all the surrounding areas, the family of Yusuf, Ya'qub, and his brethren, they came and they made a trip. They made a trip to Misr, and they came to collect the grains because of the famine. So when they came, Yusuf alayhi salam said to them that the next time you come, you must bring your brother Binyamin, otherwise you will not get any more grains. So when they went back, they then asked their father if they'd be allowed to take Binyamin. Now knowing that they had lost Yusuf the first time round, this was another trial for the father. So he was very, very wary and cautious. So he made them, give them guarantees and so on and so forth. And then he allowed him to go, Binyamin, to go with his brothers back to Egypt. When they went back to Egypt the second time, Yusuf alayhi salam, before they left, he got one of the servants to plant something in their belongings, like a utensil. And so it would be thought that they had stolen something. So they went, and then Yusuf sent the authorities to go and, you know, say that you've stolen something, and we have to keep this, your brother back, Binyamin, to keep him back. And you can't take him back. So then they went back to the father, and now a second round of grief upon the father, because now he lost Yusuf, now he's lost Binyamin as well. And he sent them back to go and collect, to find Yusuf and to bring back Binyamin. So when they came back the second time, he revealed to them that he is Yusuf. And, you know, he forgave them, and he told them to go back and bring his mother and father and bring them back to Misr. And then when they came, they all prostrated to him. And this was a fulfillment of the dream of Yusuf alayhi salam. So this is just a very broad outline. And you know, inshallah, just to make sure that we all understand the basic outline of the story. So let's begin then from the benefits. From the benefits, first of all, is we see that in this story, there are a number of dreams. The dream of Yusuf alayhi salam, the dream of those two prisoners in the prison with Yusuf, and the dream of the king, the Malik. So obviously there's an issue to do with dreams and dream interpretations. And so As-Sa'di rahimahullah ta'ala, he mentions at the beginning that there are three types of dreams. And the interpretation of dreams itself is a sign of good understanding and having intelligence and having good expression and being able to... So this was something that Yusuf al-Islam was bestowed with. And the dreams he mentions are of three types. The first are those which are just things that a person sees, he experiences on a day-to-day basis, and then those things come to him in his dream. So they something which remotely resembles the kind of things that he saw. And in these things there isn't any ta'bir. There isn't really any interpretation or expression. They are just the, you know, loose, wild kind of things that a person has in his dream, which have a remote connection to the things which he saw whilst he was awake. So there is nothing in these dreams where there's scope for any type of ta'bir or expression or interpretation. These are just confused things that a person sees. The second thing is what shaitan, he throws into the spirit of the soul of the one who is asleep. And these are lies. These are just false things. And likewise, these cannot be interpreted or explained. There's no expression of these things. And nor should a reasonable person with intelligence to, you know, be engrossed in these things. The third type of dream is the ru'ya as-sahiha, or ru'ya saliha. This is now the righteous dream. And these are either inspirations that Allah gives to His servant. He makes him see things which inspires him to righteousness or to understand certain things. Or they are analogies, they are examples, they are similitudes that he is shown, that the angel shows to him in order to make him understand certain things. And as a result, he will see something that will turn out to be a reality and which then expresses itself. So this type of dream is the dream that Yusuf alayhi salam, he saw. And because Allah gave him knowledge, gave him ilm, and allowed him to distinguish between a true and correct dream and a false dream, he was able to understand and he was able to interpret the likes of these affairs. So in this dream, the dream of Yusuf alayhi salam, his own dream, we see Allah mentions, إِخْقَالَ يُوسُفُ لِأَبِيهِ يَا أَبَتِ إِنِّي رَأَيْتُ أَحَدَ عَشَرَ كَوْكَبَا وَالشَّمْسُ وَالْقَمَرَ رَأَيْتُهُمْ لِي سَاجِدِينَ. When Yusuf said to his father, "Oh my father, indeed I have seen 11 stars," which is 11 stars, 11 stars, and the sun and the moon, I saw them all prostrating to me. So Ya'qub al-Islam, he explained the meaning and what it will eventually lead to. And he explained that the sun and the moon is the father and the mother of Yusuf. And the stars are the 11 brethren of Yusuf. And what will happen is at the end, eventually, all of them will be prostrating and submitting to Yusuf. And when this happened in Egypt, eventually, and he raised his mother and his father out of respect, they all prostrated to him. And Yusuf said, "Ya abati hadha ta'wil ru'yaya min qabl qad ja'alaha rabbi haqqa." Yusuf said, "Oh my father, indeed this is the interpretation, this is the outcome of my vision, my dream from before. Allah has, my Lord has made it to become real." So in between all of this, between him seeing the dream and between the dream becoming actual and true and real, in between all of that, there were certain attributes and traits and qualities that actually led to the outcome of the dream. Such as, for example, knowledge. A tremendous amount of knowledge. Meaning that Yusuf al-Islam had a tremendous amount of knowledge. He had a tremendous amount of righteous deeds. He had a tremendous amount of ikhlas, sincerity. He was chosen and favored by Allah. He performed the rites of Allah, and likewise he performed the rites of the creation. All of these things in between were the means by which the dream was made to become real and true. In other words, what we see in the person of Yusuf alayhi salam, from his vision to the outcome of the vision, is that Yusuf alayhi salam is a manifestation of certain qualities and attributes and deeds which themselves are part and parcel of or leading to the actual dream becoming true and real. And so in all of this, the dream itself was in fact a bashara, was a Allah giving glad tidings to Yusuf, and likewise to his father, and likewise to his mother, and likewise to his brethren. that all of them, they will have a lofty station. So his mother and his father, Yaqub himself is a prophet from the prophets of Allah. His mother was a righteous woman who was given a lofty status. His brothers, they, even though they fell into that which was wrong and oppressive, and they cut off the ties of kinship, they were forgiven by Yusuf and by their mother and father. And Allah Azza wa Jalla, He forgave them. And so in all of this we see that there is a tremendous outcome, and in between all of these things there are lessons for the people who ask, as we mentioned from the ayah. So this was the dream of Yusuf. As for the dream of the two men who came into the prison, then one of them he saw, as Allah Azza wa Jalla says, إِنِّي أَرَانِي أَعْصِرُ خَمْرًا وَقَالَ الْآخَرُ إِنِّي أَرَانِي أَحْمِلُ فَوْقَ رَأْسِي خُبْزًا تَأْكُلُ الطَّيْرُ مِنْهُ. One of them said, indeed, I see that I am pressing grapes for wine. And the other said, indeed, I am seeing that I am carrying some bread on my head from which birds are eating. Now Yusuf alayhi salam, when these men came, before he even started to explain the meanings of his dreams, he gave them da'wah. He gave them da'wah. And this is a tremendous benefit for us. Because we see in the ayat, when they mention this to him, he says to them first, لَا يَأْتِيكُمَا طَعَامًا تُرْزَقَانِهِ إِلَّا نَبَّأْتُكُمَا بِتَأْوِيلِهِ قَبْلَ أَنْ يَأْتِيَكُمَا. He said that I will interpret this dream for you before any food comes to you for which you will be given provision. Which shows the rapid and quick understanding of Yusuf al-Islam in understanding the dream. He said to them that even before anyone comes to you from outside to give you food, I will already have explained your dream to you. So then, as he begins to address them, he gives them da'wah. And so this is from the wisdom of Yusuf al-Islam, despite the fact that he is in prison, despite the fact that these prisoners have come, and despite the fact that he knows what the meanings of these visions are. What does he say to them? He says, first of all, he says, ذَلِكُمَا مِمَّا عَلَّمَنِي رَبِّي إِنِّي تَرَكْتُ مِلَّةَ قَوْمٍ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَهُمْ بِالْآخِرَةِ هُمْ كَافِرُونَ. He says, this, the interpretation which my Lord taught me, I'm going to tell you. And indeed, I have abandoned the religion of a people who do not believe in Allah and they disbelieve in the hereafter. وَاتَّبَعْتُ مِلَّةَ آبَائِي إِبْرَاهِيمَ وَإِسْحَاقُ وَيَعْقُوبُ مَا كَانَ لَنَا أَن نُشْرِكَ بِاللَّهِ مِنْ شَيْءٍ ذَلِكَ مِنْ فَضْلِ اللَّهِ عَلَيْنَا وَعَلَى النَّاسِ وَلَكِنَّ أَكْثَرَ النَّاسِ لَا يَشْكُرُونَ. So he explains to them that indeed I have followed the millah, the religion of my forefathers, Ibrahim and Ishaq and Ya'qub, so his father, his grandfather and his great-grandfather. It is not for us that we set up partners with Allah. All of this is from the favors of Allah upon us and upon the people, but most people do not know. So the first way in which he is given da'wah to them is he's mentioning his hal, his state and his condition. And this we see in other parts of the Quran. For example, the statement in Surah Al-Kafirun, قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا الْكَافِرُونَ لَا أَعْبُدُ مَا تَعْبُدُونَ. Oh, you will disbelieve. I do not worship that which you worship. So this now is informing the disbelievers of the state and condition that a believer is upon. One who worships Allah alone. This is my state, this is my condition. I do not worship that which you worship. So this now is informing them of your hal, of your condition. That you are from the Muslims, that you are not from the mushrikeen. This is one way of conveying da'wah to the people. And this is one thing that Yusuf al-Islam said in before he even gave them the interpretation of the dream. And then in the next ayah, in the next two ayah, he says, now he gives them some evidence which is fitri. It is from the fitrah and it is from reason. So he says to them, يَا صَاحِبَ السِّجْنِ أَأَرْبَابٌ مُتَفَرِّقُونَ خَيْرٌ أَمِ اللَّهُ الْوَاحِدُ الْقَحَّارُ. Oh, my two partners, in the prison, my two associates in the prison, are multiple lords, diverse lords, are they better? Or is it Allah Al-Wahid Al-Qahhar, the one who is the subduer? مَا تَعْبُدُونَ مِنْ دُونِهِ إِلَّا أَسْمَاءٌ سَمَّيْتُمُوهَا أَنْتُمْ وَآبَاؤُكُمْ مَا أَنْزَلَ اللَّهُ بِهَا مِنْ سُلْطَانِ إِنِ الْحُكْمُ إِلَّا لِلَّهِ أَمَرَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهِ ذَلِكَ الدِّينُ الْقَيِّمُ وَلَكِنَّ أَكْثَرَ النَّاسِ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ. He said, that which you worship besides him are just names which you have labeled and made, you and your forefathers. Allah never sent any authority down for them. Indeed, the judgment belongs to none but Allah. He commanded that you worship none but He. That is the upright religion, but most of mankind do not know. So now, after mentioning his hal and the hal of his forefathers in that they are worshippers of Allah, they do not commit shirk with Him, and that is the religion, the upright religion, he then says, oh my two associates, tell me, are multiple diverse lords, are they better? Or is the one who is Al-Wahid and Al-Qahhar, is he the one who is more worthy of worship? So we see what he has done here is that he has argued by way of Allah's Rububiyyah through the name Al-Qahhar, the subduer, the one who subdues, who is all powerful over all of his creation. This is Allah's Rububiyyah. And as for Al-Wahid, the one who is Al-Wahid, meaning that he is unique in all of his names, in all of his attributes, unique in his perfection, in every single name and attribute which he has. So he brings these two things together, Al-Rububiyyah and Al-Asma'i was-Sifat, and he argues by way of that and says, is such a one worthy of worship for all of these diverse lords and deities which you have invented and which you have named and labeled? And so in this manner, he basically gives da'wah to these two individuals that perchance they might become guided and worship Allah alone and leave the worship of others. And all of this is before he even informs them of the dream. And now this tells us the great importance that the prophets and messengers gave to the issue of Tawheed itself. That despite the fact that he is in prison unjustly for no wrongdoing that he did, and despite the fact that these two men, these two people who have been put in prison with him, despite the fact that he knows what their outcome is going to be, he still gives them da'wah to the Tawheed of Allah Azza wa Jal. And this is how the people of Tawheed are, this is how the prophets and messengers are, this is how the followers of the prophets are, that in every single situation and circumstance, no matter who they are dealing with, they call them, they begin with this call to the Tawheed of Allah Azza wa Jal. So this is the first benefit that we can take from the issue of the dream itself. And as for the meaning of the dreams, he explained to one man that you will be released, you will go back to your master, and you will press wine for your master, and your master will give you to drink. So this man's dream is a happy, fortunate outcome. And as for the other man, he told him that you will be killed, and the birds will eat from your head. And this means that you will not be buried straight away, rather your body will be killed and your body will be left. Because birds, when birds come, they do not eat from someone's, you know, from a body when other people are around. So Yusuf al-Islam, he managed to extract from what the man told him that you will be killed, you will not be buried, and your body will be left. And then the bird will come and it will eat from your corpse. So this is really illustrating the understanding and the knowledge that Yusuf al-Islam had been given in the interpretation of the dreams. This now brings us to the third dream. The third dream is the dream of the king. And as you mentioned, he saw that there are seven lean cows eating seven fat cows. And there are seven dry, yellow ears of corn eating seven fresh, green ears of corn. So as we mentioned, the king, he asked his people about the interpretation. Nobody really knew. And they said, these are just your confused dreams. They don't really mean anything. And then that man who was in the prison, he remembered and he asked permission from the king to go and ask Yusuf the meaning of the dream. So he came and Yusuf al-Islam, he gave the interpretation. He said that the seven lean cows and the seven the seven fat cows and the seven green ears of corn, they are years of plentiful, plentiful. There will be plentiful corn, there will be plentiful, plenty for everyone to go around, and then they will be followed by 7 years of drought, in which there will be dry ears of corn and lean cows. And then all of this will be followed by 1 year in which the people will be given plentiful rain. And they will have plentiful rain and they will have oil. So then he also gave them guidance. He said to the man, he told them guidance that they should follow in relation to those 7 years of plentifulness and 7 years of hardship. He said that in the 7 years, you will sow. You will sow, and then when you sow the reap, when you reap the fruit, the corn, then you should only take a small amount of it and leave the rest. A small amount to eat and to leave the rest. So basically, he gave them advice on how they should behave in these years. So then, what happened, or before we move on to that, we see that Yusuf al-Islam managed to extract from this analogy or this dream the ears of corn and the lean cows and the fat cows. All of this was a symbol for years. Years. Right? So the seven lean cows and the seven yellow ears of corn, they represented years. And likewise, the seven fat cows and the seven green ears of corn, they represented years. Because the years, we see that the years in which the rains come or the drought comes, these in turn lead to the ears of corn becoming fresh or becoming dry, and the cows becoming fat or becoming slim. So he understood from this that these are symbols for years. And then from that he derived that there will be 7 years of plentifulness and 7 years of hardship and 1 year of plentiful rain. So from that it was understood that a drought will overtake the land of Egypt, and likewise from the surrounding areas in Philistine and Sham and other places, and the people will come to Egypt to come and to take food. So in preparation for this, as part of the interpretation of the dream, he told the man to go and say that you should, you know, take the following measures and the following steps. So this now is the interpretation of the dream of the king, and we see that in this example, there is a benefit for the society as a whole. For the people of Egypt, for the people of Sham, for the people of Philistine, where his parents and his brethren were living. And this then leads to him eventually, as we shall see in the story, him becoming being made or put in charge of distributing all of this when the people start coming from all the various, you know, different places. So all of this is part and parcel of the initial dream of Yusuf alayhi salam becoming true. All of this is Allah Azza wa Jalla bringing all of these things together as part and parcel of making the dream to become actual, to become true in actuality. So now we've discussed the three dreams, the dream of Yusuf alayhi salam, the dreams of those two men, which was a means of Yusuf alayhi salam eventually coming out of prison, and the dream of the king. What other benefits can we take from the story? Sheikh Asadi rahimahullah, he then mentions a second benefit. So the first benefit is to do with dreams. The second benefit from this story is that a person must behave justly towards his children. That a person must have adl amongst his children. And this is that when he loves one of them, he must basically hide his love as much as possible from the other children. And he should not overtly and deliberately show this preference for one of his children over others. because this is better for him and better for his children, for the rectification for his children. And we see this clearly at the beginning of the story, that when the brethren of Yusuf saw the intense love of Ya'qub alayhi salam for Yusuf, and that he was unable to have patience, and that he preoccupied himself with Yusuf, then this is what led them to engage in that very evil attempt, which is to separate between Yusuf and between his father. And they gathered together, they spoke between themselves, and they said, لَا يُوسُفُ وَأَخُوهُ أَحَبُّ إِلَىٰ أَبِينَا مِنَّا وَنَحْنُ عُصْبَةٌ إِنَّ أَبَانَا لَفِي ضُلَالٍ مُبِينٍ اُقْتُلُوا يُوسَفُ أَوْ اِطْرَحُوهُ أَرْضًا يَخْلُ لَكُمْ وَجْهُ أَبِيكُمْ وَتَكُونُ مِنْ بَعْدِهِ قَوْمًا صَالِحِينَ. So then they met together and they said, look at how Yusuf and his brother Binyamin are more beloved to our father than us, yet we are the stronger group, we are the larger group. Indeed, our father is in plain manifest error. Kill Yusuf or expel him from this land, and then you will be left alone with your father, and afterwards you can then become righteous. In other words, they plotted and they said, let us commit some oppressive deed, and afterwards we will make tawbah. So they knew they were going to commit an evil deed, and they said, afterwards we will become righteous. And so all of this, we see that the reason for this is that Ya'qub al-Islam was unable to show patience, and he manifested his love for Yusuf, and this led them to become jealous and to, you know, do what they did, and they made this plot and they planned. So after this, Yusuf al-Islam, he saw his vision, he saw his dream, and his father told him not to tell his brother the dream. And eventually they asked the father to allow them to take Yusuf out, and then they did whatever they did. And so the first lesson then is that it is upon a parent that he not, that he try as much as possible, if he has a child whom he loves more than others, that he tries to conceal it as much as he is able, because this is better for the rectification of his children. The second benefit, or the next benefit, is we see that a person, it is legislated for a person to always take precautions. So whenever he fears any harm, that it is legislated for him that he take precautions. And this is because Ya'qub al-Islam, he said to Yusuf, Ya Bunay, la taqusus ru'yaka ala ikhwatika fayabidu laka kayda. He said, oh my son, do not narrate your vision, your dream to your brothers, lest they plot a plot against you. And likewise, not only once, but on a second time, he also, when they came back and they wanted to take Binyamin back to Egypt, he also again, he made them make promises and make a covenant that they will indeed bring him back. And so this is an evidence the Shaykh derives from this, that it is legislated and permissible for a person and praiseworthy for a person that when he has reasons to be fearful and reasons to be worried about something, that he take the necessary precautions. So a person is ordered. So he takes the precautions. If they are of benefit, then alhamdulillah. And if they do not work, then he will not blame himself. There's nothing for him to blame himself for. And so this leads us to a principle which is with Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah, and which the scholars of Tawheed and the Sunnah, they speak about when they speak about the issue of Al-Qadr, Al-Qadr wa Al-Qadr, and likewise taking the ways and the means. The ways and the means to achieve our objectives. So in this example, Ya'qub alayhi salam, he enjoined upon Yusuf to take certain measures, which is to conceal the vision in order to protect himself from harm. And this is how it is with the issues of Al-Qadha wa Al-Qadr. Allah has created ways and means through which we achieve and attain things. To give you an illustration, if you are going to travel in a car, for example, and you want to be sure that you will be safe, then you take all the precautions, you make sure that the car is in working order, you check that the tires are not flat, you check that the brakes are working, you know, you take all of these precautions, the mirrors are working and fine. All of this is from the asbab, from the ways and means. It is legislated that you take those ways and means. And after all of that, still, you cannot rely upon those ways and means because there are other factors outside of your control, which are only in the control of Allah Azza wa Jalla. So for example, you could take all of the precautions, check every single thing, yet it could be the case that some other fool on the other side of the road is busy doing something, looking somewhere else, maybe playing with his phone or something, and he, you know, swerves and he comes in front of you and smashes right in front of you. You took all the precautions, but they weren't enough because there are other things which are in the control of Allah Azza wa Jalla. So for that reason, we see that the scholars of the Sunnah, they said, al-i'timadu ala al-asbab, al-i'timadu ala al-asbab, shirkun fit tawheed. That for you to take the ways and means and then rely upon them, think that just because you've taken them, therefore you will achieve your goal, this now is shirk in tawheed. Why? Because you are, in essence, as we said, you are eliminating or you are kind of forgetting the fact that there are other ways and means which are in the control of Allah Azza wa Jalla. This is the first thing. Then the second thing, وَالنَّفِي أَن تَكُونَ الْأَسْبَابُ أَسْبَابًا نَقْصٌ فِي الْعَقَلِ. To deny that the ways and means are actual ways and means is a deficiency in your intellect. That is to say, if you have the attitude that, well, you know, irrespective of whether I tie my safety belt, or whether I check my tires are okay, or whether I check the brakes are actually working or not, it's all irrelevant. If I'm going to be saved, I'll be saved. I don't need to do this. So to think like this is a deficiency in your aql. There's a deficiency in your intellect. There is no difference between a person who thinks like this and between a person who says that I'm hungry and if Allah wills, my hunger will disappear. There's no what's the point in me eating food. Because if Allah wills it, my hunger will disappear anyway. And the fact is that Allah has made food as a means of removing the hunger. Just like He has made water as a means of removing your thirst. So the one who thinks like this, who has this mentality, whether in relation to the affairs of the deen or the dunya. So, in the deen, I give you the example. Right? The example of one who says, you know, who doesn't take any precautions and who thinks that, you know, he will get a job without having to learn any skills. If Allah wills a job for me, I will get a job. Doesn't matter if I don't have any skills or, you know, take a course or learn a craft or whatever, I will get the job. This person is the same as the one who says, I will drive the car. It's okay if it has no brakes, it's okay if it has no mirrors working. If Allah wills, I'll be safe. If Allah wills, I'll die. It's all al-qada wal-qadar. This person is a fool. He's the same as the one who says, if Allah wills, I will have children. What's the point in me getting married? This person is the fool. All of these people are the same. And likewise, in the deen as well. A person will only enter paradise by way of what? Al-Iman. Wal-Amal al-Salih. Iman and righteous actions. That person is a fool who thinks that if Allah has decreed for him to enter paradise, he will enter. And, you know, without actually taking the ways and the means. You know, because Allah has made asbab, which are dunyawi, which are in the worldly sense. He links causes and effects. And likewise in the deen. So in the dunya there are some, and likewise in the deen. There are causes and effects. Right? And a person only enters paradise with iman and righteous actions. So this is what we take from this benefit, that we are ordered to take precautions. And this is from the ways and means. Right? So if you have children, take precautions with your children. Right? Make sure that they have ilm, and that they have akhlaq, they have manners, and that they are protected from the evils in the society. Take precautions with respect to them. and in every other aspect and part of your life. So this is another benefit that we take from the story of Yusuf alayhi salam. Another benefit that we take from this story is that we look at a person not from the evil at the beginning, but the perfection at the end. Right? So someone might have an evil beginning, but we don't consider things like that. We consider things at the perfection at the end, meaning the final state that a person reaches. And this is from the angle that the brothers of Yusuf alayhi salam, look at how they began. Jealousy, plotting, planning, the grief that they brought to their father, and the sins that they fell into. They violated the right of Allah Azza wa Jal, they violated the right of their father and their mother, they violated the right of the brother Yusuf alayhi salam. And not only that, they committed one evil and it led them to more evils. So every time Yusuf alayhi salam was mentioned amongst the gatherings and the relatives, they were forced to tell the lie. Every time they had to keep telling the same lie over and over and over again. And this is the nature of sin. When you commit sin, when you tell a lie, for example, you will then be forced to defend that lie with other lies. Or you commit a sin, you commit some evil, you will be forced to tell lies to hide that sin from other people, from your parents, from others. So this is the nature of sins, to be fearful of sins. But in any case, we see that in this story, the way it begins, what the brothers of Yusuf did, and how it led eventually to them being forgiven. So the point to be taken from this is that Allah Azza wa Jal, He guides people from an evil condition and He brings them to righteousness. And we don't look things at what a person started off with, because a person could be a disbeliever, it could be upon shirk, could be upon kufr, could be an evil, sinful person, an oppressor. Take for example the Tabi'i, or the Imam from the Salaf, Fudayl ibn Iyad, in the time of the Salaf. Fudayl ibn Iyad used to be a robber. He used to rob people on the roads, on the highways. And then he made tawbah to Allah Azza wa Jal. And he became an imam from the imams of the Salaf. And you know, you often hear us quote from Fudayl ibn Iyad many of his statements regarding the Mubtadi'ah, the innovators, sticking to the Sunnah, and so on and so forth. This is Fudayl ibn Iyad. Right? So a person can be a sinful person. A person can fall into sin. But a person should not, we don't judge people by the evilness of the beginning, but the perfection they reach at the end. So as we see in the story, the brethren of Yusuf, they were righteous people and they became leaders of the tribes of Bani Israel. And that's why they were called Al-Asbaq. Al-Asbaq is a word that refers to the tribes. Now some scholars are of the view that they actually were turned into prophets, but this is not a correct, it's not a correct view. The most correct view is that they became scholars. They became leaders of their tribes and they became ulama. And they link this to the fact that they were described as stars in the beginning of the vision of Yusuf alayhi salam. And we know that from ahadith, the Sunnah, and likewise from the explanation of the scholars like Ibn al-Qayyim, Ibn Rajab al-Hanbali, and other than them, that they speak about this, that the stars are a parable for scholars. The stars are a parable for the scholars. And just like we know that the stars, they serve three functions. First of all, they beautify the sky. Secondly, they are a means of guidance for the people in terms of travel. And thirdly, they are a protection from the shayateen. And so likewise, the ulama, the scholars, they resemble the stars upon the earth. Number one, they are a beautification of the earth. They are the beautification of the earth. Number two, they guide the people. And number three, they are a protection from the people of bid'ah and dalala and shirk and kufr and ilhad and so on and so forth. So this is the benefit that the scholars bring. So likewise, the 11 brothers of Yusuf alayhi salam, they were not prophets, but they became leaders and they became scholars for the Bani Israel. So this is the third benefit we can take, or the third or fourth benefit, that we look at the end, the final perfection of a person, not the evilness of the beginning. And in this is hope for everyone who might be plagued with sin, that there is hope for you. Make tawbah to Allah, make istighfar, have lofty aspirations, take a lesson from the likes of this, and, you know, have a righteous end, Also from the benefits that we can take, and inshallah ta'ala we'll finish with this, and we'll continue tomorrow, is that Yusuf alayhi salam, he perfected all of the levels of sabr, of patience. Because patience is of different levels and types. So from those types of patience is as-sabr al-ittirari. Al-ittirari meaning that this is patience that you are forced to have. You don't have any choice. And this is like, for example, illnesses, diseases, calamities. These are things you are just simply forced to have patience upon because you have no choice. And Ibn al-Taymiyyah, he mentions in fact that this is something that both animals and men have in common. Right? When you have calamities, like physical pain, things of that nature, there's no difference between a man and an animal in this type of patience. Therefore, there is no real virtue in this. I mean, there is virtue, but it's not something that distinguishes you from animals. Right? Because animals have patience upon pain. In fact, animals have greater patience upon pain than humans do. And that's something that Ibn Taymiyyah mentions, that, you know, that this type of pain, that even the animals have a more excellent, you know, virtue in this respect. This is one type. The second type of patience is as-sabr al-ikhtiyari, where you now have a choice, where there's choice involved. And this type of patience is a tremendous type of patience. Now this type of patience is when, for example, you are met with shahawat, lusts and desires, or when, for example, there are other people who oppress you, who wrong you, who harm you. And now in this situation, because there are people involved, instead of just something that you see as the pure qadr of Allah. So for example, when you have an illness, you know that nobody else has had a role in that illness. This is just purely Allah Azza wa Jalla has decreed it upon you, and you are forced to have patience. But when there's something where there's an individual involved, he cheats you, he robs you, he harms you, he backbites you, he mentions things about your family or your children, and these things grieve you and harm you, this now is something harder to have patience upon. Right? This is something that is much harder to be patient upon. Because now there's a person, there's someone there who you see. Right? So this is one type. And likewise, the shahawat, the lusts and the desires. Right? The lusts. And so in the example of Yusuf alayhi salam, we see the perfection of both. We see him implementing both of these two types of patience. As for the second type, we see that the wife of the king, she tried to seduce him. And if you reflect about all of the circumstances in which she tried to seduce him, you will then realize the tremendous sabr of Yusuf alayhi salam. There are seven things we should know in the circumstances. Number one, the first thing is the beauty of this woman. The extreme, she was a very beautiful woman. Number two, that she had a noble position. She was the wife of the king. So she has status, she has nobility. That's number two. The third thing is that she is the one who tried to seduce him. So it came from, so meaning that it's a person could be excused if he himself is not the one who is trying to seduce someone. Rather, it's the woman who's trying to seduce. So it's not coming from you. That's the third thing to keep in mind. The fourth thing is that she closed the door. She locked him into the room. There's no escape. There's no escape. The fifth thing is that Yusuf alayhi salam is in the peak of his youth. The peak of the youth is when, you know, the desire is at its height. And the ability to restrain the desire is very, very difficult. This is the fifth factor. The sixth factor is that in the circumstances there is no one from his relatives or from any other person who is around that might make him to be fearful and restrained. Meaning that everything is closed off, there's nobody present, it's complete secrecy, no one's anywhere close, his relatives, his parents, nobody near. Nobody's going to know. This is the sixth factor. And the seventh factor is that obviously he has desire, that the desire comes in that moment. The shahwa, the quwwatul shahwa is present. So in all, you know, when you think of all these seven things are present, he then had patience. What made him have patience? Allah says, لَوْلَا أَرَّعَى بُرْحَانَ رَبِّهِ. Had it not been that he saw the burhan from his Lord. What is this burhan? The Shaykh explained, this burhan is al-Iman. It is faith in Allah, belief in Allah, belief in what Allah has informed us of, whatever follows on from Iman, about paradise, hellfire, and so forth. This saved him from falling into that sin. And this is a tremendous degree of patience, and it is a lesson for every single youth. Every single youth in this is a sign and a lesson from Yusuf alayhi salam. And then the hadith in which the Messenger of Allah SWT, he said, there are seven who will be given the shade of Allah on a day in which there is no shade except the shade of Allah. And from them is whom? Is mentioned whom? The youth, a man or a youth who is invited by a woman possessing nobility and beauty, having mansab and jamal, beauty. And so he says, Inni akhafullah. Indeed, I fear Allah. And Yusuf alayhi salam is at the forefront of all of these such people. He's at the forefront. He's the first and at the forefront of all of these such people. And in fact, in this story, when you look at this story from its beginning to its end, we see that Yusuf alayhi salam is always maintaining Iman. Meaning he is constant, he's always adhering to Iman and sabr in every single situation. Whether it is in this case, when he demonstrated the levels of sabr, or whether it is in the case of when he is made a minister to overlook the distribution of the grains. And in those situations he maintains the levels of al-adl, of justice, in the way that he distributes to the various people who come and he gives them according to measure. This now is perfection in the levels of al-adl, in his leadership and his role. And likewise he displayed the levels of forgiveness when he forgave his brethren and overlooked the evil that they did. He manifested the greatest levels of forgiveness as well. So we see that in the story of Yusuf al-Islam, in every situation that he finds himself, he's manifesting all of these things. All of this comes down to what, ya ikhwan? It comes down to Iman. Al-Iman. Stick to Iman. Stick to sabr. Stick to the fear of Allah Azza wa Jal. And in your affairs, the outcome will be for your benefit. You will achieve good in this life, and you will achieve good in the hereafter. Right? So all of these points that we'll continue with tomorrow, inshallah ta'ala. This is the general message that we learn, that Yusuf alayhi salam in every single situation had sabr, was patient, stuck to the fear of Allah. And if you do that, then Allah will make your outcome to be good. He will give you the good of this life. He will give you the good of the hereafter. So, inshallah, we'll conclude with that for today's lesson. We'll continue tomorrow, inshallah, ta'ala, with some other benefits. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa sallallahu ala Nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in.